This is Scott Becker, and I'm thrilled today to be joined by some really, really smart people to talk about future planning for hospitals, particularly given the changes coming from COVID-19, this crisis, and more. We've got on the phone a brilliant sort of physician founder, the founding partner originally of Surgical Directions, Dr. Tom Blasco, current title, Senior Physician Managing Director of Surgical Directions, a MedNext company. And joining him is Ann Cole, a terrific leader. She's the Associate Vice President of Perioperative Nursing at Surgical Directions. We're going to talk today, about 30 minutes, about what hospitals and health systems will look like in terms of planning post this situation. Now, sort of kick it off with a question to Tom, Dr. Blasco, and to Ann. The typical American hospital, prior to the pandemic, depended on procedural care for its sort of financial viability. Average hospital profitability, a point and a half, 1.5%, or something like that. Now we're at a spot where lots of elective procedures are stopped for the moment, but when procedural services start again, those that are unrelated to COVID-19, what could the typical hospital expect after the pandemic? Dr. Blasco or Ann?
I'm going to answer this question, and Ann, please join me if you have any additional information. But the current hospital structure in the United States, as Scott said so well, is based in large part on procedural services. And that includes the operating room, the cath lab, the GI suite, et cetera. It depends on procedural services for up to 70% of its revenue and most of its profitability. You can imagine hospitals that are hanging on by the narrowest of margins are really going to be affected adversely and with this dramatic reduction in elective surgical care within the hospital. This is not occurring. It's not just occurring in the hospital. It's occurring in throughout the ambulatory surgery market also. The result of this is going to be severe financial strain. And the question is, what is going to look like? What has COVID caused, and what's it going to look like after the pandemic starts to resolve? First of all, everybody expects a bump of volume, of pent-up demand. And the question is, I don't know if it's going to be a big bump, because I think what's going to happen, there's a lot of now social issues in the American population related to having elective surgery within the hospital, related directly to COVID. It's going to take a real effort on the part of hospitals working with their surgeons and working with their entire staffs to bring back these patients that are going to be reticent about having elective surgery done in hospitals. The other demand that hospitals are going to have to face is radically and rapidly changing capacity needs. So right now, everybody's being furloughed or laid off or reduced care because of, and I'm talking about procedural services, the ramp up in terms of going back to normalcy, and what is normalcy, will have to be carefully managed so that the efficiency, productivity, and quality of care remain very high. You're also going to have to understand that the hospital's main competition is the ambulatory surgery center and the office-based surgery. I can guarantee you those centers and those office-based procedures are going to ramp up much more quickly for a variety of reasons that we'll probably talk about that later. So the hospitals are going to come out of this in probably significant financial distress. They're going to try to return to normalcy, but I think a lot of the normal things are going to take a while to return. I don't know if all the volume that they experienced before is going to be there after the bump, after the pent-up demand. And the other kind of sidebar issues, which are really kind of important in this whole thing, is that hospitals are going to have to address nagging issues that they've never really dealt with prior to COVID. The first issue is relatively low productivity and efficiency that they've had to deal with over the years. They're not very competitive when you compare them with efficiently run ASCs. And also the other things like stipends for various specialties. Are they going to be able to continue paying those stipends? There's a lot of issues the hospital will face, and it will be a daunting environment. And those that are nimble and understand these issues will survive. Those that won't may not survive as we know now.
Well, thank you. So, Dr. Blasco, I heard 5 or 6 thoughts from you. Obviously, severe strain in hospitals right now, and the margins were already under strain. A lot of pent-up demand, but even though there's a lot of pent-up demand, that might not lead to a quick peak in cases, because hospitals have to deal with furloughs and layoffs and bringing back some of the people that were doing some of these things. And so the ramp-up might not be as quick as expected. It will take time to gain back the confidence for people having procedures as much as they want to at hospitals and health systems. They do face lots of competition from surgery centers and practice offices, which may be easier and smaller to ramp up. And then there's also issues they've had to deal with for a long time on productivity and efficiency and stipends and how those look in the new world. Ian, let me ask you if there's anything you wanted to add to this discussion.
Well, I also think that we need to consider the challenges the nursing staff has with their children, the education of their children, their potential husbands losing their positions. Do they need different shifts? How are they going to work on different hours, different weekends? So, you know, their lives are changing also in this, and the stabilization of the OR staff needs to be reviewed and modified so that we can meet the demands of the returning cases, because they will look different. We may work different hours. It will look different. So those all have to be, you know, thought about and reviewed ahead of time as we start to migrate back into some form of normalcy.
Fascinating. Fascinating issues that most people don't think as clearly about is sort of how the nursing staff comes back online fully and getting back to stability of the OR and the OR environment in a great way. Thank you. Anna, Dr. Blasco, let me ask you the next question. With procedural services driving hospital revenue and profit, how could the typical hospital respond and take advantage of this post-pandemic environment and strategic trends? What can hospitals do to better position themselves?
Well, I think the most important point is be ready, and don't continue to follow the old culture and the old processes that have existed within hospitals for over 100 years. COVID right now is basically making transparent all these issues that have been plaguing hospitals for since the 1920s. And this reality check has been long overdue. By necessity, as we set up in the previous questions, hospitals will have to quickly right-size and downsize and focus on what they do best. Hospitals are not the best places to do a lot of ambulatory surgery, but hospitals are the best places to do complicated, high-tech, very sick patients. But before COVID, there was a lot of issues related to relatively low productivity and low efficiency. And this has to be addressed. You need to, I actually wrote a blog this morning, and one of the major changes occurring is the following, answer to the following question: who's your customer? If you ask the typical hospital executive in this country who your customer was for your operating rooms, up until just a few years ago, he would say without hesitancy, the surgeon. And that relationship between the hospital and trying to keep the surgeon, you know, busy and satisfied with care produced a lot of issues within the hospital. The COVID has, and there's been also some recent trends that basically have changed the customer. The customer is now no longer going to be the private practice surgeon. It's going to be the patient and more importantly, the payer. The payer will dictate where the patient goes by co-pays and by directed authorization. As we talked about before, there will be out-migration that will continue with the ASC and office-based surgery. And this will continue to accelerate. So hospitals have to basically respond to these stresses, these industry-wide stresses by basically developing very streamlined, choreographic team management of patients, and this is going to be guided by very sophisticated data and analytics, which they've never done in the past to a great extent. A lot of change is going to happen a lot very quickly, and hospitals are going to have to basically understand that the old methods of working with their patients and their surgeons will have to change dramatically.
So a lot of change in a hurry, even post this very difficult time that hospitals are having with COVID-19 and performing heroically, but very difficult time, and a lot of renewed focus in this shift in focus from just physician or surgeon to payer and patient just as much, understanding who their customer is and focusing on what they do best. Ian, something to add there?
Yes, I think what's most interesting is how quickly some of our hospitals have been able to mobilize a virtual patient engagement tool, able to have our patients call in, talk with a physician or talk with a provider about our health. I think that this is a great time for the procedural area to engage with those tools, to contact our patients differently now, more efficiently, and utilize digital patient engagement tools for ongoing education, preparation, reminders, keeping in contact with them differently. I think this is a great opportunity to embrace what we're doing with the COVID process and use it every day in our patient preparation.
I agree, Ann.
Well, fantastic. Thank you. And you've seen hospitals, I mean, lots of brilliant minds and people running hospitals, and you've seen them adopt these tools in a hurry once they've got access to some of these tools. Ann, is that a fair statement?
Yeah, they do. I think it's always been cost prohibitive. And it has been difficult to encourage systems to embrace these tools, but I think that they've now realized that it's essential, and it's a very quick way to get in contact with patients safely, efficiently, and it's a continuum of care tool also. So I think it's a good time to embrace these methods.
Thank you. And either Dr. Blasco or Ann, answer this next question. Describe the opportunity with key hospital procedural services stakeholders, meaning surgeons, anesthesia, administration, nurse leaders, to sort of break down traditional silos and collaborate for needed changes to ensure the viability of hospitals. You know, how do you break down these silos? What's the opportunity to do so?
Well, that's kind of the foundation of surgical directions. What we learned 25 years ago when we started this was that to start breaking down the silos and starting to address the inefficiencies and the low productivity and not addressing, let's say, quality issues that should have been addressed, you need to develop a different leadership model. That model, we call it the Surgical Service Executive Committee. It's not the nurse director anymore. It's a multi-specialty collaborative group of nurses, surgeons, anesthesia, and senior hospital administration that becomes literally the board of director of the operating rooms. This type of new leadership model, based upon great data and great analytics that guide and help to support their decisions, is a much better approach than the classic nursing hierarchical approach that typically runs operating rooms. Once you start empowering physicians and nurses and administrators to start dealing with some of these problems, you see the silos start to melt away because everybody realizes that they're all in this together and they have to work together, which has not occurred for most of the last century, in this century.
Mm-hmm. And this focus of teams working together to do what Dr. Blasco talks about, a board of directors of the operating room with mm-hmm. surgeons, anesthesia, nurse leaders, administrators, all sort of working together to get it as great as possible. What are your mm-hmm. thoughts on that?
Oh, yes. So many thoughts there. It truly is a proven method to have the operations of the OR work very well. It's very choreographed. I've experienced that myself. And it really drives efficiency, productivity. It really drives best practices. We can work better with our physician partners and our administration partners to really drive change and best practices using this model. And it's very successful. And everyone can appreciate their expertise coming from their perspective.
You know, and actually following up on Ann's point, you redesign multi-specialty group that kind of guides the process in a way it's never, and holding people accountable that were never held accountable before, and developing teams. Then you build a new management team from the front lines, basically between great cooperation between anesthesia and nursing, and that basically manages daily operations in a much more proactive way. And finally, you get right down to the process improvement level. You're not going to change culture within an operating room or procedural services without changing the process of how patients get through procedural services. So it's a three-level approach. It's leadership, it's management, and it's process change. And that will dramatically improve the operation of hospitals and their operating rooms.
Give me those three things again, Dr. Blasko.
Leadership, management, and process improvement.
Thank you. Thank you very, very much. And data. People talk about data constantly. Dr. Blasko and Ann, why is credible and transparent data provided to the leadership team and procedural staff and clinicians necessary to support change, to create best practices, to better efficiency, production, quality, productivity? Why is data and transparent data and good data so important? Why is that so critical?
Well, it's kind of interesting that hospitals have been mandated to install these incredibly complex electronic healthcare record systems, but these systems are not capable at this particular point in time in providing appropriate analytics and data that can really guide and assist with improvement efforts. Surgical Directions has spent a lot of time, and we have a lot of what we've discovered is that hospitals really don't know what data is important. They don't know the best benchmarks, goals, and they need to really develop individual report cards for their entire teams. And so we're finding that data provided to the entire surgical and procedural team will actually promote change and will actually guide change in a very positive way. For example, you ask a typical hospital administrator what his efficiency and productivity in his operating room is, and they couldn't tell you. They think they're doing a pretty good job, but they really don't know. What's your on-time start percentage? How often you cancel delay cases? What's your turnover time? How productive are your operating rooms? Are they reaching the 75 or 80% utilization that is going to be required for future hospital viability? Much of this data is not available. And that's what I think needs to be rapidly brought to the fore in these hospitals.
Thank you. Now, let me ask this question, Ann and Dr. Blasko. Staff and clinical-driven solutions to processes, how does this help change care? How does this improve patient care? And Dr. Blasko, any thoughts on that, staff and clinician-driven solutions, and how does that actually improve patient care?
Well, I would like to say that focus work groups of the staff in the OR, the procedural staff, and our clinicians, really, they create a collegial partnership to help us review the issues, the barriers, and then those opportunities to improve and change. As we develop those change processes, we evaluate them, we can have our staff help drive those changes, adopt them, and then really it fosters an atmosphere of for improved care. We create safe environments for us to have great dialogue so that we can talk about these things that need to change and why, and we listen to each other's perspectives. So that really is so helpful. And in the end, you know, we can have better results, better patient outcomes, problem resolutions, by sharing, you know, each other's knowledge and as we move forward with each of those things. Again, it's really the process changes that will help develop our culture. We want to have open discussions. We want to have collaboration. We truly want to embrace best practices with transparency, you know, really resulting in best outcomes for our patients.
So, Tom, you founded this company a long time ago. You guys have had brilliant success, really focusing on processes. you know, systems and processes early. Why are systems and processes so important to reducing variability and making things all run the same consistently? Why is it so important to making that work right?
Well, organizational, it's a profound question. Organizational transformation, it does not occur easily. And it takes almost a scientific approach and understanding of behavioral change, and everything is resisted. No matter how good the decision and the idea is, it will be resisted by the organization. Ian and I have found that to be universal. By bringing together groups that are basically related to all aspects of patient care, in other words, the system approach, you have a much better chance of, first of all, building the burning platform, getting people to understand that there's a need for change, and then secondly, bringing them through the various phases of organizational and behavioral transformation that must occur. But it's got to be system-wide. You cannot bring about this kind of change with this small little approaches in very small little areas. It's got to be system-wide, otherwise this change will not occur.
Thank you, and systematic, system-wide, and consistent. Ian or Dr. Blasko, one more question for you, and we'll let you go shortly. Describe recruitment strategies to draw clinical staff to the procedural arena as our older, you know, OR leaders start to age and retire. I mean, there's been a huge effort even in COVID-19 to bring people back, but how do you get people to the procedural area over the next several years as the world changes, as people start to retire and so forth?
Well, this really is a key question, and a lot of discussion needs to happen with our hospital administrators and our human resources department to really look at things a little bit differently. You know, we need to provide and have a very stable employee pool for our procedural areas. And as we look at our new recruits that are coming in for jobs, they're looking for things differently than what, you know, my age nurse looked for years ago. They're looking for the employers to facilitate or participate in loan support for them as they graduate from school. So they're hoping that their new employer will give them each year an award amount of money to their loan. And that's totally different than what I would ever have expected, you know, 15, 20 years ago. But they're asking about that, and they will migrate over to hospitals that do offer that benefit. You know, it really takes us about over a year to train a new procedural tech or nurse, and it costs us about $70,000 to train one person. So it's very costly to train someone in the procedural area and then let them go to a competing hospital for a different wage. So again, we need to look at our retention perks and how it affects the overall hospital expense when we rehire and retrain consistently. I think our call model needs to be evaluated. You know, work-life balance is important to our employees coming on board, and we need to do the analysis. Would it be better off to have some full-time call people taking calls so that we can have better utilization of our staff? We don't have to worry about the next day. We have staff working after many long hours without rest periods. So that really needs to be looked at. We also need to look at our student nurses programs coming in through our hospitals. So often a surgical experience is not included in that full training anymore. So we really want to welcome them into the OR, have a nurse in an externship program, onboarding them, assigning them coaches and mentors so that they do get a full support and embracement when they come in. You know, it's a high acuity area. They have to learn how to work in this department. We also want to embrace our staff differently. You know, they understand the problems in the department. They often have answers. We need to sit with them and listen. We need to sit with all our partners and listen, evaluate the feasibility of changing some of the things that they see need to be changed, and you know, promote that atmosphere of listening and sharing and making improvements together.
Well, fantastic. And it is really a changing workforce and a changing way in which they look at it, and so critical that you got a great, stable OR team, and it's expensive. And so fantastic thoughts, Ann. Dr. Blasko, anything you wanted to add as well?
Well, I think we can finish up with the concept that things have been changing. It's been driven primarily now by the payer and the patient, unlike the previous culture that has existed for almost 100 years. I think hospital administrators in particular, and surgeons, proceduralists, and anesthesia and nursing are all going to have to come to the realization that the old system is being rapidly replaced by a very new, nimble, high efficiency, high productivity, patient-friendly system that's driven by the appropriate analytics and data, and that is managed with a new management leadership model and new frontline operational management techniques. And finally, it is for the organization to truly change and adapt and survive. The entire process has to be reevaluated and made much more streamlined and patient-friendly, with the caveat that the outcomes are going to be measured, and if you can't reach expected outcomes, you're going to have to readdress the problems that are preventing you from reaching the desirable outcomes and benchmarks.
Well, fantastic. I want to applaud both of you on the incredibly data-driven, systematic, process-driven, team-driven work that Surgical Directions does. I've talked to health systems that have had just raved about the results from you. In fact, the health system I talked to just a couple weeks ago asked for a recommendation on something else, and they told me how thankful they were for the original recommendation to Surgical Directions and what a huge difference you made to their system. And so just a magnificent thing that you've developed and company that you've grown, and I know now it's part of MedNax Surgical Directions. But thank you, Dr. Blasko. Thank you, Ann, for sharing your time today. Incredible what you've done and what services you provide. So thank you, folks, very, very much.
Thank you, Scott.
Oh, you're most welcome. Thank you.